We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
The living legend himself.
Shut the fuck up! Juicy J!
Yo, what's good, man?
What's with the mess? Juicy J?
You're promoting a book, your memoir, Juicy J. Not a horror movie. I know you love horror movies, but damn.
Hey, man, I'm an advocate of mental health awareness, so I just wear this mask to show people, hey, man, it's a different side. You don't have to do nothing crazy or harm yourself or harm other people. You can always get some help. Call 988, any kind of hotline, or reach out to an organization to, take care of your mental health.
And with the straight jacket.
And the straight jacket,
I'm not mad at it. I'm a big mental health advocate, too. So if you're doing that to raise mental health awareness, I ain't mad at it.
Yep. I'm going to need my own assistant. She can take my mask off. That's cool.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to talk in this.
Juicy J said Halloween came early.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There we go.
There you go. Come on. Show them you ain't aging, Juicy J.
Yeah, man.
There you go. Fresh lineup. Hairline intact.
Still 30 years old, man.
There you
know
go.
What I'm saying?
Still 30 years old. There we go. Thank
Juice
you,
Juice has an amazing book out right now called Chronicles of the Juice Man, a memoir. I'm going to be honest with you. I got this book a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I didn't even know Juicy J had a book coming out.
Yeah.
And from the prologue, it's exciting. Thank you, man. So many questions about the book, but I never knew, first things first, that they had flavored cocaine.
Yeah, hey.
Watermelon, right. Cotton candy.
Is that where you want to jump in? Not why you wrote the book. Let's find out why you wrote the book before we get watermelon flavored cocaine.
With flavored cocaine. I didn't know they had that.
Hey, it was crazy. When I seen it, I was just like, y'all, I was like, what the fuck? How y'all put the flavors in there?
Yeah.
I'm not going to try it, but you know what I'm saying?
What made you write the book? Let's start there.
I always wanted to write a book. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing this for a long time. Y'all mm-hmm. been seeing me. I've been mm-hmm. knowing half of you motherfuckers when y'all was interns and shit. So, mm-hmm. you know, so it's just that time, you know. And it was really difficult when we was doing a book, me and Soren Baker. He wrote it with me. My mom was, she got diagnosed with cancer the time I was writing this book. So it was just like, it was man, very, 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 I had a very hard time trying to finish it. But we you know, we broke through, we finished it. You know what I'm saying? Rest in peace, and here we are. So I always wanted to do this, you know.
That'd be the most interesting thing about memoirs, man. You know, your life in the industry was great.
Yes.
But it's the stories before the industry.
Yeah.
That made a Juicy J that's yes. even more interesting.
Yes, yes, yep.
What made you want to name your memoir after the first solo album?
I mean, it talks about, I mean, it's Chronicles, it's my life, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? It's telling everything about what's going on. So, I mean, I just used it. It was perfect, you know what I'm saying? It matches everything with, you know, from my story and everything. So, it's perfect fit. That's how I looked at it.
Was there anything that you had to take out? You know, we've been reading, you know, a lot of our OGs in this game have been writing books from Jeezy to Fat Joe to the recent ones. Was there anything that you had to take out? Because you were so brutally honest in this book.
Yeah, it's a few things, man. It's, I'm not going to say no names, but it was some, you know, I had some people come to me about killing themselves in the book. It's more than maybe like 3 to 4 people I had put in the book. And then when they read it, it was like, you know, like the lawyers and stuff was like, man, you can't put all this stuff in there. And then I talked to some of the people and they didn't want me to do that. So I took it out. But,
yeah. And you never tried cocaine?
No.
Contrary to popular belief.
No.
Never tried cocaine, but you talk about why in the book. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. I was, when I was like a kid, I was watching TV and I seen this basketball player named Len Bias.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, Len Bias, he died on cocaine. And I was like looking at T, like, cocaine? I didn't know what it was. I was like, cocaine? I was like, I ain't never doing cocaine. Like, when I seen that, that stuck in my head. I said, I just felt like if I did it, I'd die. And mm-hmm. then, like, as soon as right after that, I could have been 13, 14. And the older I got, you know, I started getting approached in Memphis. Like, you know, I would see people in the street. They'd be like, hey, man, want some coke? Hey, you want this, want that? And I was like, first thing came to my mind, like, that's stuff that Len Bias took. I said, hell no, man, I ain't taking that shit.
No matter what flavor it come in.
Yeah, fuck that.
And you always seem to have like a sense of self-awareness about yourself that other people around you didn't seem to have. How has that self-awareness helped or hurt you in life?
You say help or hurt?
Yeah, helped or hurt.
I don't really think it hurt me. I think it kept me to survive. I survived off that. It's weird. I would have these two voices in my head. I have one voice be like, hey, do this, do that. Smash that without the rubber, whatever. Then I have another voice be like, man, don't. You know what I'm saying? You know what happened to EZ? You know what I'm like? I had like real shit. I had these voices in my head telling me, like one is telling me to go, one is telling me, nah, you might not want to do that because, you know, this girl might be this, you might get her pregnant then and child support and all, you know, just all kind of crazy shit. Even just whatever, not just saying just with females, just with in the street stuff. You know, it's times I talk about it in the book. I had mm-hmm. the strap about to blow somebody's ass off and mm-hmm. then like 1 minute, something's telling me to go, then something's like, nah, man, you might don't want to do that because this person, you know, he might snitch on you. Can you trust this nigga you mm-hmm. with? You know what I'm saying? So stuff like that, man. And it's good that happened like that because I'm here today.
Right. The reason I say the self-awareness hurt is because sometimes you might be too critical on yourself. I see that throughout the book. Like, you know, whether it's about, oh, 3-6 music is whack. And I'm like, I don't remember that time. Like, you know what I mean? Like stuff like that. Like you might have been a little too hard on yourself.
Well, I'm very hard on myself, you know, mm-hmm. right? I'm very hard on myself. I didn't say it was whack, I don't think. I think I said it didn't sound right at the time mm-hmm. when we was in L.A. because we was lost in the, you know, we was lost in the sauce. We didn't, I mean, I felt like when I was in L.A. for so long, I just, you know, I lost my taste of sound and music and what the wave was and everything, you know what I'm saying? I'm usually on top of that and never fell off of that. But when I was in L.A. partying, kicking and drinking so much and popping pills, I lost it all, you know? I'm doing music that was... I was stuck, you know what I mean? You know, like some people move forward. I was stuck in like 2005, somewhere like 2003, you know what I'm saying? I was stuck in that era, and then when it was 2008, music was totally different.
Mm-hmm. So, what got you out of that slump?
I got the hell out of LA and I moved back to Memphis. You know what I'm saying? Like immediately, I sold my house. I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Everybody like, you leaving, man? I'm gone, bro. Like if I stay here, man, I'm gonna be fucked up. I'm gonna kill myself because I was doing so much drugs and Vicodin and shit, Adderall, all kind of shit, bro. I had a medicine cabinet full of shit. Like you could have came, I could have prescribed you some shit, bro. Because I had so many people, you know, doctors. Like, you know what I'm saying? I never get my shit off the street. I never fuck with that street shit. I always get my shit straight from the doctors. You know what I'm saying? So I had these, I call them wacky doctors. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They would give me all kind of shit. You know what I'm saying? Whatever I want to give them, $100, $200, they'd be like, all right, what you want?
The funniest part of that story, I mean, there's always humor in everything, right?
Yeah.
So you talk about how you told your girlfriend at the time to come pick you up.
Yeah.
Because you might kill yourself.
Yeah.
And then it's like two sentences later, so I broke up with that girl and I moved back to Memphis. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
She came to your age.
yeah, for real. She did. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate that. You know, thank you. You know what I'm saying? But I was to the point where I needed to get out. So, you know, I had a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. I was just pressured about I was stuck. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so used to making great music with the group and everything was moving forward and everything was falling apart. So I was like, you know, I was really depressed, bro. I was drinking, crying. It was just like, I was just hurt, man. You know what I'm saying?
And people wouldn't think that because you was having the most success. You know, y'all had just won the Oscar. You had the MTV show.
Yeah.
You know? Like, nobody would think you would be depressed.
Yeah, well, people, when they would see me, drinking, but I was drinking to escape. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I was really trying to get away from the pain I had that was going on with me. You know what I'm saying? Even y'all probably seen me during that time or, you know, just around because we was partying. I mean, I was running to everybody. Yeah, I was smiling and drinking, but like deep down, I was not feeling too good, man. I was really fucked up. You know what I'm saying?
And I refuse to believe, man, that you ever wore two rubbers. I don't know why people be telling that goddamn lie. You ain't, it's impossible.
I did.
You can't put on two rubbers, man.
Yes, you can. Yes, I did.
I don't believe you.
I did.
I don't believe you. I just refuse to believe that.
Well, hey, man, that's.
When did you stop then? When did you stop?
I mean, when I settled down, you know what I'm saying? You know, I said, all right, you know, I fuck the rubbers, you know what I mean? When I settled down with, you know, one girl, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going crazy, bro. I was 2-3 girls a night, you know what I'm saying? I was pop, pop, pop,
pop, pop, pop. Yeah, but you did this in high school. You wrote this record in high school. What was the record?
Slob on My Knob?
No, before Slob on My Knob, it was another one.
Oh, Don't Be Scared, Put the Rub on it. Yeah. Don't Be Scared, Put the Rub on it.
There you go.
You know what? Well, I had a situation, you know what I'm saying? I was with this chick, yeah, and then I got, you know, sizzled, and then I wrote this song called "Don't Be Scared" with the rub on the hair,
yeah,
for rubber, you know, like safe sex, but it was a hit in the hood,
yeah,
niggas just walk around in the club. Well, I can't say club because I wasn't really going into clubs like that, but I would see niggas in the street and, you know, like people like playing it in their cars. Don't be scared, put a rubber on the head. It was just a chant.
So you were never even scared to talk about the STDs in this book either.
No, fuck it. You know what I mean? It's real. A lot of motherfuckers out here didn't get burnt before.
Burn the fuck up!
Burn the fuck up! DJ, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I ain't never had STD.
No, me neither.
Never in my life. Whatever. Promise of God, never had STD in my life.
Hey, man, that's you.
Grace of God.
Now, you said you moved back to Memphis, right?
Yeah.
What did Memphis mean to you? You know, recently I did a car show in Memphis, and I see how much Memphis supports Memphis.
Yeah.
So talk about why you left Memphis and then why you thought you had to come back. Because a lot of people say they have to leave Memphis because a lot of times the hood takes them out.
Yeah, I had to come back to get my mind right. You know what I'm saying? I just wasn't grounded. I had been in L.A. too long. You know what I'm saying? It took me over. My music was sounding different. I was moving different. I was doing a lot of crazy drugs. And so I went straight back to Memphis, and I just went back to the hood. Hung out with my niggas and chilled. And, you know, I got my vibes back.
Mm-hmm.
I understood what, you know, my grounds were, my roots. You know what I'm saying? And then I was like, all right, well, cool. I can go anywhere in the world, and I'll never lose my sound again. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't know you and Project Pat was actually brothers. And I didn't know Paul was Lord Infamous's uncle.
Yeah.
Does it make it harder or easier working with family?
No. It's cool. Mm-hmm. It's everything. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad I work with my family, man, because my brother is one of the persons that brought me out of this shit. You know what I'm saying? I was in L.A. He would come in there. I'd be laid out on some lean. He'd be like, what the fuck y'all doing? Mm-hmm. Y'all niggas ain't hot no more. He would tell me that. You know, I'd be like, what, nigga, what you say? You heard what I said. Y'all ain't hot. I'm in the clubs, nigga. You niggas out here in L.A. high as shit. You know what I'm saying? They ain't playing no 3-6 Mafia in the clubs no more. That shit done.
Damn.
It's new niggas out here, man. He said, man, y'all beats don't even sound the same. Man, y'all shit ain't got no. Y'all ain't. He said, you got to put that hand bass in y'all beats. He said, man, listen to this bass and listen to y'all bass. You know, he playing, I think he was playing some drummer boy stuff. He listen to this nigga bass, listen to y'all bass. Y'all bass ain't. And I was like, you right. Mm-hmm. I mean, he told the truth, man. That's what you need. I mean, like, I don't need no yes men. I don't like yes men around me. I like niggas tell me if I'm doing something crazy. I always tell people in the group, man, look, If I one time picked up Lord Infamous, right, I took him to the tried to take him to the rehab. He didn't want to do it. We riding around the neighborhood for almost an hour and a half. I'm trying to get this nigga to, bro, you need some help. He's like, nah, man, I'm cool. No, no. We're talking, and I told him, I said, look, man, look, I'm just looking at you as a friend, brother. I love you. I don't want nothing to happen to you. And I said, and if you see something I'm doing, please tell me. Don't yes man me, my nigga. You know what I'm saying? Don't be like, yeah, Juicy Go. You see me doing anything crazy drugs or with the wrong crazy bitch, or you think I'm with a you know, some skis or something, I'm about to get robbed or whatever. You feel that ain't right, please tell me. You know what I'm saying? I tell Paul, anybody in my group or anybody around me, like, don't yes man me, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, check me, nigga, if you see me doing something crazy, because I want to live. I don't want to go to jail or do some stupid shit, you know. But this time, I am.
What's taught you more about life, being in the industry or the life you lived before the industry?
I say the life I lived before the industry, because if I didn't go through all the stuff, you know what I'm saying, in North Memphis, I wouldn't be where I am today. You know? Facts.
I was going to ask you, you know, there was one time they used to say that the music that you guys put out was demonic, and that was like that the thing. How bad did that affect y'all?
Man, the music, I mean, I'm a church nigga, man. So, I looked at this shit like, you know, like, y'all niggas ain't no devil worship, though. You know, ain't nobody fucking, you know what I'm saying, worship no devil or touching a Ouija board or whatever the fuck y'all think it is. Nah, I just looked at it like, hey, man, it is what it is. But I felt like we had to clean the name up, so we changed the name to 3-6 Mafia. Because I felt like it was everybody was scared. Record label was like, I don't know, man, I don't know. We might want to sign, we might don't. So it was, you know, whatever, man. We changed the name up, and then things started coming together, you know.
You even say in the book how, you know, that you, the 3-6 Mafia thing, the devil worshiper thing was kind of a gimmick.
That's what I felt, you know what I'm saying? I didn't see nobody worship the devil, so I just looked at it like a gimmick. You know, I didn't look at it like it was really worshiping the devil, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, like, Memphis was a dark city, so it was a dark time. So, you know, 3-6 Mafia was perfect for that. At the time, you know what I'm saying? Because, man, Memphis is still dark, but it was like, just it's crazier now than back then, but, you know, that's what I'm saying. I was coming from that, so it was cool. But then, like, later on, we started making, you know, more music and, you know, a couple more. I don't think we brought this album out called The End. We had changed everything. It went from 3-6 to 3-6, and it was better. You know, our sound had, we stepped our game up on the sound. We had a couple of records on there that was a little bit more radio friendly, because nobody wanted to play our shit on the radio. So we had a couple of records on there radio friendly. So, yeah, man, you know, it's just about growth, you know.
I was going to ask, how difficult was that coming up, you know, because the sound was different. It was a sound that we haven't heard before. How difficult was it breaking into different markets outside of Memphis?
Man, we didn't give a fuck. We just did what we did. You know, people caught on. You know what I'm saying? We just experimented with a lot of things. Man, me and Paul was one of the most greatest producers of all times. I mean, we would experiment. I don't want to give all my formula away. You know what I'm saying? You got to, you know, read the book and, you know, pay for that. But we experiment with a lot of different things, man. We a real artist, you know what I'm saying? We ain't just niggas just walking in and just make a beat. We bring the pain. You know, you might walk in our studio, you might see a whole fucking orchestra in that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? And like, we just had our minds was just bigger than just making a couple of beats, and that was it. But like, I had the SP-1200. I would make beats on that, but then I would add extra shit to it. Like, and I can't tell you how I did it, but you know, it's a secret how we made our music.
Well, the formula to me was Memphis.
It was Memphis.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I love about the book too, how you detail Memphis's music history.
Yeah. Well, everything came from the city, you know what I'm saying? But just the way we made our beats, we had a certain kind of formula we made our beats. Like, you know, some people make their beats a certain way, some people make, you know what I'm saying? We had our way we made our beats, because everybody like, how y'all make y'all bass sound like this? How y'all make y'all kick sound like this? How y'all make y'all, you know what I'm saying, snare sound like that? So we created our own snares. We created our own kicks. See what I'm saying? We didn't get our kick from somebody else. We created it.
Now, you talk about the drug use in the book, and, you know, you just mentioned it now. What got you to slow down on the drug use? Was it the birth of your kids? Was it Mom Dukes? Was it not in the zone? What got you out of that?
God called that time out.
Yeah, it was getting crazy. I remember I was at a show in Atlanta, and I was coming from Atlanta. I was doing a lot of Xanax, and I was drinking at Bombay. Man, I was just like really, really fucked up, man. You know what I'm saying? Like slumped over in the car, and my bodyguard was like, he's like, hit me like this. Hey, man, take it. He just whispered in my ear, take it easy on the drugs, man. You're looking bad, man. You know, and I was on the ride home, I just had tears in my eyes. I was just thinking about 3-6 Mafia and how could we get this group back together and we could figure shit out. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, that was just one incident. And then I did a show in New York, and I had left my Xanax in the room. And boy, See, I didn't know the power of Xanax. You got to take them joints every day. If you like miss a couple of days, man, you start getting these crazy body aches. Mm. I'm talking like this shit is like, man, I was like scratching. I was like tweaking. I was like, man, I don't feel right. I was telling Ray, I was like, man, I don't feel good, man. I didn't take my Xans and shit. I left them in the room. And then we did the show and I was sweating on stage. And man, it was just like crucial. So then I remember we went to Atlanta, kind of moving forward because we were flying all over the place. Like, we just went to Atlanta because when I got back to the room, I took the Xans, so I was cool. I was like, whew, jeez, fuck. So then we went to Atlanta and I made a mistake one, left the Xans in the room again. And we had to do the show. And I just, man, at that day, I was really feeling really down, bro. I was like, just like slumped over and I was like, man, I'm not feeling good, man. And I was outside the club and I was telling Mike Will, I was like, man, I left my Xans in the fucking hotel room. He said, oh man, I know you going through it. And after that, I was like, man, I can't do this shit no more. And my manager, my cousin, took me to a doctor, and the doctor told me how to get off the Xanax.
Did you have to go to rehab, or was it something that he gave you?
No, well, he just told me I was taking a whole one. He said, take a half one. He said, take a half, and you'll gradually just get off of it. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, really? So I just started taking half, and I just gradually just...
Half, quarter, tenth, and then...
Yeah, and I got off of it, you know what I'm saying? And right today, I mean, I'm cool. And don't get me wrong. It's just times I've been on a plane. I might take a Xanax. I'm on an airplane. But I'm not addicted like that. You know what I'm saying? I actually really need them. They prescribed to me. I really need them. But I don't take them like I used to take them. I used to be like just taking them, drinking alcohol. Fuck it. Sip some lean. Fuck it. You know what I'm saying? I remember I was in fucking Toronto. I was sipping lean, taking Xanax. And I just felt my body was just slowing down. I was like, oh. And then like that voice hit me in the head like, pour that damn lean out. And then one boy said, man, you gonna pour that lean out? That's a lot of lean, man. That's a good lean. Mm-hmm. Then the other voice was like, nah, pour the lean out, not pour the shit out. I said, fuck it. I want to live, man.
And then your peers can't come up to you and talk to you about it? Because, I mean, in the industry, there's so many people that have been on it, got off of it, have been on it. We've seen lose so many people. Let any of your peers say, let me talk to you, Juice.
You said my parents?
Your peers. Anybody else in the industry?
Oh, no. No, nobody. Nobody said anything to me but my family, the people that was close to me, like my manager and... You know, my bodyguards and stuff, people from Memphis.
Well, you had a lot of people close to you that didn't get the opportunity to, you know, shake it like you did. You know, you think of the Mac Millers and, you know, the Gangsta Boos, God Bless the Dead. Do you think there was a point you wish you could have, like, I don't know, intervened with them, or you couldn't help them because you couldn't even help yourself at the time?
Well, you know, back in the day when 3-6 Mafia, we first started, I wasn't really doing a lot of drugs like everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I might sip a little lean here, smoke a little taste of weed there. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a heavy drinker, but... I didn't do drugs like they did drugs. They was really going hard with the cocaine and, you know, Lloyd was on a little heroin here and there. You know what I'm saying? It was very, very serious. So my situation was I was trying to get everybody off. Not so much I was trying to get everybody off of the... I really didn't give a fuck about the syrup and the pills because I feel like that really wasn't the problem. The problem I saw was the cocaine, because when they do cocaine, when they come up those withdrawals, they go crazy. You know what I'm saying? It makes you mad. Makes you like you a tough guy. You know what I'm saying? Niggas would hit that cocaine, boy. They would fucking tear shit up. Paul them going to the club.
Tear the club up for real.
You know
real,
what I'm saying? Motherfucker would throw, man. I seen Paul throw a chair. The motherfucker shoot a strap. You know what I'm saying? Like, motherfucker go crazy. You know what I'm saying? Niggas was just turned up like that. Mm-hmm. And I was only, you know, like half sober nigga. I mean half sober. Like, I might have had a couple of drinks or something. But I'm still sane. So I'm like holding Paul back. Lord, Coop, you know what I'm saying? Coop was crazy as hell, man. I ain't gonna lie, rest in peace, but he would do anything. Like, Coop's a nigga was just like, if you just say, man, let's just blow up a building, he'd be like all for it. Mm-hmm. He was crazy like that, you know? And Crunchy Black, same what? Crunchy Black was every week he was going to jail. He was fight, shootouts, all kind of shit. You know what I'm saying? Real shit. So I was just trying to, I wasn't as high as them. I was just trying to get that cocaine out the way, because I just, every time the cocaine was in the building, the shit would go down. If the pills was cool, you know what I'm saying? I didn't see nothing going drastic with the pills. But the cocaine was crazy. And then when I seen Lord on the heroin, I was like, oh, this is getting a little different now. It's getting extra serious. Mm-hmm. And that's when he just kind of, he pretty much left the group on his own.
I must have misread in the book. I thought there was one point Lord Infamous didn't do drugs, right?
And at a point he didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? At a point he didn't. He just smoked a little weed. And then he just, you know, things started going up.
Dang.
You know what I'm saying? The more money we start getting, things start going up. And I was just trying to, man, I was the main dude just trying to hold, you know, everybody back from doing that. I call it the white devil, you know what I'm saying? Because it was really fucking shit up. And it was destroying the group, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, things advanced. We won the Oscar, and then that was it. You know, we went Hollywood, and shit.
How difficult was it to talk back to the members during that time when everybody went their own ways and everybody was having their own success? How difficult was it to say, you know what, let's put the group in front of everything else?
It was very difficult, man, because they didn't listen to me. They just laughed at me. They thought I was talking shit.
Who was the most difficult to talk to?
Lord have mercy, man. Rest in peace. He was a cold motherfucker, man. Like, he was the man, man. He was hard to deal with. I remember we was in the car, and the nigga had, like, we got pulled over, right? They didn't find nothing in the car. And then I looked into his pocket. I said, nigga, I said, man, you better be glad they didn't check your motherfucking pocket, because his pocket, this nigga had some Xanax. He had a lot of shit in his pocket. Like, it's like his little, he had like a little button down, you know, had like the side pocket. Mm-hmm. His side pocket, he had so much. He's like, oh shit, I forgot all about that. I forgot to hide that. I was like, oh. After that day, that was the day I said, I can't ride with you niggas. I went and got my own transportation. I went and got this van. Cause we used to ride in like the same vans. Me and Paul used to drive the vans, and then we started hiring drivers.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training, and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
That day when he said he forgot to hide that drug, the heroin and the coke and whatever else he had in that little side pocket, I was like, fuck this. I had to separate myself because I was like, man, I can't make no money in jail, bro. I ain't trying to go to no motherfucking jail, my nigga. Like, we making money. We having success. Why the fuck I want to get pulled over for some, you know, some cocaine or some shit that wasn't even mine and go to jail for it? I said, that's not smart. I said, he didn't listen to me. At all. Crutchy would listen sometimes. Very Koosa nigga, no. But and Gangsta Boo, she would listen to me though. She would. I had to calm her down a lot. A lot of times she hit some coke, she'd go crazy. Gangsta Boo was gangster, real gangster, you know what I'm saying? She'll fight a nigga, kick a nigga, whatever, she cuss a nigga ass out. But anyway, she listened to me a lot, but it was difficult with Lord Infamous, man.
When you was writing the dedications, because I feel like the dedications of everybody that you lost, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
When you write that, how did that feel? Just to have to write that dedication?
Yeah, it's bad, man. It's crazy, bro. Like, I shed a tear every other day, man, thinking about that shit, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's been a great painful journey. You know what I mean? Great painful journey.
Your mother, Lord Infamous, Koopsta, Gangsta Boo, Clinton, Nigga Creep, Brady, and Cardi K Rock Burns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
man.
Yeah,
man.
I always want to ask when I hear stories about, you know, drug use like that, like, do you remember who introduced you to it, right? Because as a kid or growing up, I remember who introduced me to my favorite car, my favorite sports team, my favorite rapper, my favorite musician. Do you remember the time that somebody introduced you to that drug? And what made you say, you know what, I'm going to try it?
I'm trying to think the Xanax, who introduced me. I mean, you know, like, at the end of the day, like, Lord and... Crunch them. They did a lot of Xanax and stuff. So, you know, it was around already.
Mm-hmm.
And we was flying a lot. And I was talking to this doctor I met in Hollywood. I was like, man, I'm flying and shit. I probably need something to calm myself down or something. He's like, oh, I got something for you. And he just gave me the Xanax. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of went from a little conversation. I was like, okay, I know, you know, Crunch them take Xanax. You know what I'm saying? So it
went from there.
You know what I'm saying? I never really seen them go crazy, like off the chain on some pills or even some lean, you know what I'm saying? They was kind of sleepy or kind of, you know, slum or whatever, but even that was like the cocaine. I wouldn't do no, because I felt like the cocaine was more like the rage drug. So I was like, I ain't never had to tell these niggas to slow down on the lean or stuff like that, so I guess this might be cool to, you know, pop a Xanax or something. And then it gradually, you know, definitely makes you feel good. So it gradually just kind of slowly but surely took me over, you know what I'm saying? And then the lean, I already knew about lean. I mean, I sipped lean. I had sipped lean before, so, you know, I had the hook on the act. I had so much act, man. I was the act man, man. I was the act man. I still got some.
Act?
Yes.
What is act?
Activist.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
What, did they discontinue it or something?
Yeah, they banned it. I still got some.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
What is act?
Activist. It's a drug.
What is that? You said the full name?
Yeah.
I'll Google it.
Yeah, Google it.
Now you
try
it. I love in the book. No, don't try it. I love how in the book you pay homage to Memphis music, but you talk a lot about Stax Records.
Yes.
Talk about how you were influenced by that, by the story of Stax Records.
Al Bell, Jim Stewart, you know what I'm saying? He had a sister too that was involved in Stax. I can't remember my name, but her last name was Stewart too. Man, I was just influenced by that, man. You know what I'm saying? Isaac Hayes, Rufus Thomas, man, you name them, man. They had the Tim Prees. And it was the biggest record label in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was coming up, you know, it was over with, but they had tore down the building. I remember it was in the news, in the newspaper, they tore down the Stacks building. I was like, why the fuck would they do that? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I just thought it was some racist shit. I'm like, man, these folks don't want to have shit out here, man. They just tore the motherfucking building down. Like, that's a historic place. And they tore it down, and then eventually built it back up. But I was like, man, we gonna be like Stacks, man. I'm going to follow in the footsteps of Al Bell. Al Bell was like, he was running Stacks, a black dude. And I got the book. I read that book, like, back and forth and back and forth because I was so interested how to – I had this nigga from, you know, he was from D.C. Al Bell's from D.C. And I was just, he moved to Memphis and he started running Stacks. So I was just so interested, like, how this man, you know, run a whole record label. So I was just reading about what he did. And I talk about it in my book. Everything that he did, I did a lot of stuff, you know, in my life, in my career, to follow in his footsteps, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that was the big influence that I had.
I don't want to give too much away from the book, but like when I read about the issues you had with your father, right? Yeah. And some of your upbringing, and then, you know, now you got two children.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've done a good job of breaking some of those generational curses?
I think I wouldn't call it a curse. I just call it I just learned something from it. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from it. I think I'm good, man. I'm good with my kids, man. Like, if it wasn't because my mom and my dad, I'd probably be some madman. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm just being real. They took care of me. I love them. They took care of me, man. They made sure we was straight, regardless of, I call it small family issues, because it wasn't nothing like big. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I never was like, F my family or nothing like that. I mean, I've been there for them from day one. I'm still there for them. Like, even I talk about it in my book, like, every time they call me, I don't care what I was doing. Mm-hmm. If I was in a strip club having sex, the phone ring and it's my mom or something, I'm like, hey, stop the music. I picked the phone up all the time because mm-hmm. Memphis was so bad, and I didn't know, they just called me to check on me, see how I'm doing, or it could have been like an emergency. I mean, one time my dad called me, I was high as a motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of weird too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I thought I was smoking some weed and I thought they had put some cocaine in it. And man, bro, I was so high, I was like laughing and shit. I couldn't stand up straight. I was feeling like I was about to pass out. He just called me. I know, he's like, what you doing? I was like, chilling. You know what I'm saying? He's like, oh, okay, I was just checking. I just thought about you. And I said, man, this must have been a sign from God. Let me get out of this. I was at somebody's house. Let me get the hell out of here, man, at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so I left. But yeah, they took care of me, man. They made me who I am today.
Your granddad had two families and all had the same names?
Yes. Yeah, he had one family in Memphis, and I think the other one was like in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had named them the same names, so he couldn't.
That's wild.
Yeah, so he couldn't. He could remember the names. You know what I'm saying? Like, my mom's name was Shirley, so he named his other daughter he had somewhere else Shirley, so he could remember the names.
When did y'all find that out?
My mom told me, and my aunts told me. They told me a lot of stuff about him. I mean, he passed away before I was born, but they told me a lot of stuff about him. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like going back to mental health. You know, my mom, you know what I'm saying, for her to come from that kind of situation, you know, I could tell, like, you know, she had been damaged by that. You know what I'm saying? I could mm-hmm. tell through her movements and things she did, she was upset about that. You know, she told me her dad never told her he loved her. You know what I'm saying? So that's bad, man. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So, like I said, man, mental health starts with in the beginning of your life, and then it can affect you later. It does affect you later on in your life. You know?
You ever think about why our parents never said I love you? Like, why was it so difficult for our parents to be like, I love you? Because we hear the story all the time about our generation saying their parents never said I love you. My daughter, I say it all the time. I say it overly, but you know.
I think we take for granted, and like the way you're talking about mental health, the way I talk about mental health, we're the first generation that has the luxury of healing. The generation before us, they were scratching and surviving. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't thinking about that kind of stuff. They weren't thinking about emotions and all that.
My mom told me, she told me she loved me though.
Yeah, my mom did too. Yeah, my dad didn't.
Nah, my dad didn't. Yeah. But nah.
Later on in life,
I think he did too, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, we need that though. You know, the kids mm-hmm. need that love, man. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And like I said, and that affects us later on in our life. You know, you think about, like, my mom talked about that, and I was like, damn, she I felt like she was really messed up about that. Like, he never told me he loved me. You know what I'm saying? She would say it and she would have tears in her eyes when mm-hmm. she said
yeah.
So. Yeah, it's terrible, man. You know what I'm saying? I hate she had to go through that. And she really never talked to anybody. She was always quiet about a lot of different things. And that's why I said, man, a lot of times we just need to be needing to have somebody to talk to, you know, like a therapist. I have a therapist, you know what I'm saying? I heard you talk about therapists. I got one. I've had a couple of them, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we need that, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, we definitely need to pray and pray to God. Most definitely, that's number one. Mm-hmm. And if we need to have somebody to talk to, we need to have somebody to talk to try to help get over that. Because I feel like if she maybe would have had, if she would have talked to somebody about that, and somebody maybe like could understand her and listen to her, things maybe have been different. My mom was closed off. She didn't really, she had like a lot of friends. She was kind of just closed off. You know what I'm saying? It just affected, you know, all that stuff affected her, man.
What got you on your healing journey?
You know, talking with my therapist. My therapist, the first thing he told me, he said, man, let's start with the beginning. You know what I'm saying? How were you raised? Where'd you, you know, whatever, how's your mom? And then that would put me, I was like, oh, okay, that's why I'm like I am today, because mm-hmm. I went through this. And you know what I'm saying? Okay. That's how I realized, he helped me realize, like, my issues I had, like my paranoia, my always looking over my shoulder, you know what I'm saying? I might overdo it. I might have like more guns on me than the average gun I'm supposed to have. You know, maybe it's like, hey, man, you're going to a small function, bring one gun. I might have 2-3. I mean, just bring one security. I might have 4. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Coming up in Memphis, it's like, nigga, man, it was crazy out there. You know what I'm saying? I was like, nigga was talking about robbing me, doing this and doing that. So I'm like, shit, I'm going to be on point. Motherfucker won't pull up, I'm going to shoot him in the face. You know, mm-hmm. that's just how I was. You had to, coming up in Memphis, you got to be like that. They make you like that. Even you try to be like, I'm going to be cool, I ain't going to do nothing. Man, nigga steal your bike. Nigga stole my bike. You know what I'm saying? Nigga shot my car one day. I'm like, all right. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. Okay. I'm going to mask up on your motherfucking ass, nigga. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I started sinking into that environment. So, and then it did, but still, you Mr. Tough Guy, whatever, still you got to look over your shoulder because you don't know if your best friend or somebody next to you going to blow your ass That's off. Right. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like real shit. Niggas a snake out there. Niggas mm-hmm. pull some moves. I done had niggas set me up and all kind of shit. So,
So you just had a bunch of unhealed trauma you needed to unpack.
There you go.
Word.
So I'm like just right here. So then even when I come to LA, I go anywhere. I'm on the same type of time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I ain't never like, oh, I'm just chilling. I'm in a different city, so I can just chill. Hell no. We got more guns. Mm-hmm. We got vests. I used to sleep with a bulletproof vest on in Memphis. Damn. You know what I'm saying? When I was in my house, you know, cause it was just so bad like that. I would sleep with the vest on. Then I would try to train myself to wake up to grab the gun at a certain time. I hear a noise in the house. I'm fucking jumping up with the strap, you know what I'm saying?
Like, police told you to get a better gun one time, though.
Yeah, I got pulled over. He seen my gun. I had this little 38. He said, man, this piece of shit took the bullets out and threw the gun back at me.
Damn.
Said, man, get you a better gun, man. And they drove off.
Damn. How would you define Memphis now versus when you were growing up?
It's worse than now.
Really?
Oh, shit. It's so bad now. Man, they jacking every day, bro. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like... It was bad then, but now it's like they didn't boost it up.
I feel like, you know, and we always say that things are worse now. The thing I think is missing is there's no, like, it's just crazy. There's no spiritual foundation. Like, these kids ain't got no morals, no values, like, no respect.
No.
I mean, you know, there was a respect among, there was an honor among thieves and crooks back. I know that sounds crazy when you think about it, but
yeah.
It was.
Yeah, it was a real street code back then. You know, yeah. You're right, it was honor, you know what I'm saying? It was like, all right, we're doing this, we're doing that, but we're not doing, you know, we're not, you know, no kids involved, you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that in street business. But now it's like, fuck it, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Anything goes, nigga. You walk through the door, anybody with him, kill them all. You know, they just mm-hmm. think like that. People mm-hmm. think like that now. It's fucked up. That's why, man, like, you know, when I'm done with this rap shit, man, when, you know, the older, when I get close to 60, you know what I'm saying, pushing 70, shit, I'm running for office or something down there in Memphis, man. I want to change the city. I want to give people better jobs because they don't have job opportunities down there, man. Like, the hope is down there. It's like, there's no hope. So people are just going crazy down there. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I think if they had better jobs and opportunities down in Memphis and definitely some, you know, somebody talking to these niggas, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. and talking about mental health and talking about situations in life and how can we try to fix this, I think things could be better. It's just take time, but.
Also, I think there's more, I think you need more things to do.
Yes.
Like, anything comes to the city, like I said, when I did the car show out there, it was so many families. And even the police and the sheriff, they were happy. It was like, we need more events like this for kids to get them out the streets. Let them come in there and see things and be inspired. And I was like, a lot of cities need stuff like that. And the amount of people that came out in Memphis, it was just amazing. But then when it was time to do an after party, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to come do an after party. I heard 3 people got shot last night. You know what I mean? So it was that type of thing as well, you know?
Yeah, it's bad, man. Yep, I feel you. I know y'all had like hella police with y'all workers.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask,
busy out there.
When you talk about somebody setting you up, How do you trust people again after you say somebody on your team set you up? Like, how do you develop that trust again? Because that got to be difficult.
I don't fuck with them no more.
Well, besides them, how you
how to develop the trust?
I mean, like other people on your team, because you always got to be looking over your shoulder. You always got to be scared, you know?
Man, you know, you just, I just say, man.
Or do you not trust anybody anymore?
I really pretty much don't. You know what I'm saying? I trust the folks I'm with, you know what I'm saying? I mean, look, at the end of the day, Three Six Mafia, I trust a lot of people in Three Six Mafia. You know, but it was like a lot of outside niggas that was coming in and out I didn't trust, you know what I'm saying? And the group didn't trust, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like situation like that. But as far as before Three Six, I mean, like, not even talking about Three Six Mafia, me just coming up in North Memphis, no, I couldn't trust nobody, man. No. I had this chick set me up. I was at this chick crib right one day. And I slept, like, when I woke up, I was like, damn, I never slept that long. You know what I'm saying? I woke up, all my money in my pockets was gone.
Damn.
My car was on flat. All four tires was on flat.
See, you should have said no to ratchet pussy.
You know, right? And she was like, what happened? I'm like, bitch, what happened? You stole my, she like, no, I didn't do shit. So I went out to my car. I'm like, man, what? My tires on flat. And like, the nigga didn't cut my tires. He just let the air out my tires. So I got somebody to come by and put the air in the tires, and I left. And then she called me like a day or two. She's like, I didn't set you up. I didn't do anything. Why, you know, you don't call me. I just want you to know I didn't do that. I said, bitch, don't call me no more. I was on the phone in her face. You know what I'm saying? I just use it as a lesson learned, man. You know what I'm saying?
What if she was telling the truth, though? You just knew she wasn't.
I was at her spot. I mean, yeah. Look. I mean, like, it was like her mom's house. And I mean, she had a couple of brothers in there. You know, she tried to blame it on her brothers. But, man, come on, bro.
Damn.
Come on. I was in her room.
That would have been the end of ratchet pussy for me, Juicy.
I mean, you know, I just had to.
Are you at the point now where you can say no to ratchet pussy?
I mean, I'm married now, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so,
you know, that's done. But, you know, after that, I started getting hotel rooms. I didn't get hotel rooms at first. Mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, at a chick's house or whatever. I might have had a strap or something, so I'm thinking I'm good. Nah, mm-hmm. I wasn't good. After that, I started getting hotel rooms and shit. So, you know, like, I would pull up and get like, you know, they had these hotels in Memphis. You can pull up like a drive through, get like 2-3 hours. Mm-hmm. Smash and then dash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The book, you got to get the book, man.
Yeah, it's all in the book.
I want to say, on Good Morning America, they wouldn't let you wear the straight jacket in the Hannibal Lecter mask, right?
No, it was a little scary, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but it's all good. They good, man. I had a great time over there, man. They good people. I understood. I brought extra outfits, too.
So what'd they do? They just came to you and said, hey, man, did you tell them what it was for? Did you say, I'm trying to raise awareness to mental health?
We had that in place, but they weren't really trying to hear that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know.
Damn. Are you executive producing Megan Thee Stallion's new album?
No, I wish I was.
But
I'm executive producing Ty Dolla $ign's album.
Okay.
Ty Dolla $ign's album, and then I'm producing a lot of stuff for Megan. I'm doing a lot of production for it. Yeah.
I heard y'all got a lot of records together.
Man, we got a lot of hard ass shit, man.
So why? I personally, when I heard that, I'm like, damn, Juicy J EP and Megan Thee Stallion, that sound hard. Mm-hmm.
Nah, that's Ty Dolla $ign. Ty Dolla $ign album is real. It sound like a 2000s, you know, mid 2000s, Three Six Mafia album. It's hard.
Really?
He's singing over. Singing over that shit crazy.
Is that what he wanted? He wanted that vibe?
Yeah. He asked me to executive produce the project.
What's Meg's vibe like? Because, you know, that's this is a big album for her. After everything she went through, like, this is a big project.
Big project. I can't tell you that, but it's hard. Hard in the motherfucker. She energized, man. She going in. She killing everything. Yeah.
All right. Well, the book is out right now.
Yeah.
Oh, One more question. Hmm? What does Psalm 107:1 mean to you?
Psalm 107:1, which
Psalm 107.
This one on the back.
Yeah.
Oh, let's read it.
Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever.
First, I thought you said song.
Yeah.
This is something I chose. You know, every album, I always put a Bible scripture on my albums. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever noticed that. So I felt like this right here, oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Like his mercy, everything, you know, he has mercy on you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, you can change your life around. He gonna forgive you of all your sins and your wrongdoings. So this is very inspirational for me. It just, I feel like this is a part of my life right now. You know what I'm saying? Trusting in the Lord, man, because he forgives you, and you can always start over and be a new person. You know what I'm saying? You can go from bad to good. You know what I'm saying?
I love it, man. Juicy J talking about spirituality, mental health. Yeah. Come on, man.
That's right.
Come on, man.
Pick up the book right
now. Don't tell
now,
us black men ain't evolving out here.
Chronicles of the Juice Man.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate you for joining us.
Go get it right
us.
Now. Salute to Soren Baker, too. Soren, you did a phenomenal job. Yep. I don't know you, but you did a phenomenal job.
Yep. Great job. Yep. All Shout out to 3 Sis Mavi, DJ Paul, Crunchy Black, rest in peace, Lord, Infamous, rest in peace, Gangsta Boo, and Coops the Nigga. And everybody, shout out to the whole Hypnotized Camp Posse, man. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully one day we can all get together and do a crazy tour. I had an idea. I thought, you know, since I heard BG got out, you know, shout out to BG. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, it'd be dope if Cash Money and Hypnotized did a whole fucking tour. That'd be dope.
That'd be dope. That's what you said, remember we said that earlier. That I would love to see him on tour.
Could you be able to do that without the Gangsta Boos and, you know, everybody else?
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll do it. Maybe bring like a hologram or something, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do something special with the special effects. Yeah, I think that'd be dope.
You still dealing with that? Do you ever get over that? Or
get over the passing of them?
Yeah.
Never. Never. I think about all of them all the time, man. I cry here and there, you know, real shit. Like, that shit told me up, man. Still, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's the Breakfast Club. It's Juicy J.
Yes, sir.
Shut the fuck up! Shut the fuck up!
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.